Hello. Hey. Welcome to the Shit Show with J-Bo. I'm sitting here in a small farmhouse in western Pennsylvania, super stoked that I got to talk to Danny Lee Blackwell in this episode of the Shit Show. Danny Lee Blackwell is the singer, creative force, and guitar player of the Nightbeats, a psychedelic rock band who base themselves out of Seattle. He's from Texas. Some might call his music Texas psychedelic rock. Some might call it rhythm and blues. Some may call it just rock and roll. He's here to set the record straight and talk about things like the amazing collaborations he's been doing with people as varied as Ronnie Spector, the whole way to folks from the Black Lips. He's here to talk about all kinds of shit. I forget, to be honest, what we all talked about at this point, but I'm about to listen. I'm about to listen to this whole podcast. That's how good it is. That's how much of a narcissist I am. I gotta admit, I do like the sound of my own voice. But I really like the sound of Danny Lee Blackwell's voice of the Nightbeats. Listen to him talk about his latest record, Who Sold My Generation? I may or may not have music at the very end of this podcast, so listen till the very end, depending on whether his record label lets me or not. I wanted to thank Sean Ruffner for helping me produce the music at the beginning of this podcast and the little music pad you hear right now as I'm speaking. So go ahead and sit back, learn a few things about the history of rock and roll, about the depth of psychedelic rock, about what drives the Nightbeats and Danny Lee Blackwell to be one of the hardest working bands I've ever seen. Enjoy, folks. This is the Shit Show with J-Bo. Hope you're having a great day, and we'll talk soon. Bye now.
My name is Danny Lee Blackwell, and I play the Nightbeats. I play guitar, and I sing, and I write music.
You sure do.
I play in other groups, too. I have a couple different collaborations with various people, and I love to be able to collaborate with people, and thankfully enough, I've been fortunate enough to play with a lot of people I really respect and have a good time with. So,
who are you collaborating with, Danny, or is it Lee?
Either one, Danny Lee, Lee Danny, whatever. But I've been working with Robert Levin Bean from Black Rebel Motorcycle Club for a little bit here. He helped produce and did some bass work on the last Nightbeats record. But me and him have some just other stuff that's just the two of us. I have a friend, Curtis Harding from Atlanta, Georgia. We have a project with the two of us and two other members from the Black Lips, Cole and Joe.
Oh, awesome, dude.
Yeah.
I love the Black Lips. I love that Athens, Georgia southern sound they have, man. It's great.
Yeah, Atlanta. But yeah, they really pioneered that. They pioneered that sound. I mean, everyone tries to call like bands like us or Black Lips or whatever, like retro or like throwbacky or something like that, where it's like, No, we're just doing what's always been done. You know, just rock and roll has never gone away. So it's, garage rock or whatever people want to call it, it's just good music we like to play. So, but yeah. And then, Christian Bland from the Black Angels and I have a group with, Bob Mustachio from the Warlocks, and we have a group called UFO Club.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. And I don't know, just the kind of smaller ones like Shannon Shaw from the Clams asked me to come in and play guitar on the Hunks and His Punks record that came out, Street Punks, that came out like a couple years ago. Did that one. I'm in the process. I don't know if it's a go yet, but we're speaking with Ronnie Spector's management, and I think there might be something there. I got to play guitar for her last year, so.
Dude, you're blowing my mind with this information. I had no idea. That's amazing.
Yeah, I like to stay busy with music. If I don't, I go a little crazy.
How do you approach your guitar, man? I mean, I was getting down with your latest record, Who Sold My Generation, just all day today. And at some point, I realized, I was like, holy shit, I was really inside the guitar solo you were doing, just laying in the bed there, listening to it. And I don't know if that sounded weird or not, but how do you approach it? You seem to be very emotional with your guitar playing, but not from, like, you didn't practice, you didn't have a teacher. I feel like you're self-taught. People compared you to Jimi Hendrix. I don't know, man. Does that ring true? Do you like that guy?
If people say that, they don't know what they're talking about. That's the highest possible honor you can give somebody, but I don't see that in a million years. I just don't try to come into it with a script, you know, when it comes down to solos or anything. I never write out a solo, or I never do a solo the same way twice. So, yeah, it just needs to be comfortable. It needs to come from a place of emotion and honesty, or, you know, something. I never try to over. Sometimes I don't know where I am. I just kind of get lost and find notes that work. And, you know, the use of feedback and bending is, you know, having like an accent. So I try to do what I can with those elements.
So you're kind of finding notes as you go, and I'm sure you have a couple pre-programmed licks you like to throw in, but it's not scale-based, I'm guessing, or is it? I mean, I don't know.
No, I mean, I don't really even have, like, say, I guess, like, every solo on the latest record is, and a lot of, like, the hooks even just happen naturally, and then I might stick with it, I might not, you know. I just try to, if I feel happy with it, I feel like it is matching what's going on in a certain way, but also pulling it apart, then I feel like I'm doing my job all right.
Now, do your live performances mimic the recorded, or is it kind of a mixed bag? Sometimes.
Yeah, no. Yeah, they're always different. I mean, there might be a couple of lines that you could recognize that are on the record, but I don't think it would be fun to just play the same thing every time.
Like Interpol did or something.
Yeah, you know, like one, like I like to mess with people sometimes and do like a one note solo, and it would just kind of make it kind of weird, and but, you know, use the note but like bend it and go in and out in a certain way. So yeah, I like to change it up and keep it interesting.
Do you enjoy keeping your setup fairly minimal? I mean, I saw you at Levitation, man, and I knew it was like your first gig with a bass player, with that particular bass player. And I was like, man, there's all these bands with this huge, crazy, like, band and tons of gear. But here's a Nightbeat through in the middle of the day. Just people were loving it. Super minimal setup. Is that how you like to keep it?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, I'm not, like, opposed to, you know, bands like Spiritualized or something that has, like, you know, 50
sure,
people
sure,
on stage
sure.
or whatever. But, you know, just for the nature that it is Nightbeats right now, I think it's accomplished with three people. And, yeah, you just go into the philosophy, like, less is more, you know, like the key to complexity and multiplicity is simplicity. So I think Mighty Hannibal said that. But, yeah, you know, if it gets the job done, and then it's definitely worth it. Three people is definitely enough.
Do you look at the Nightbeats as you, or do you look at it as the band? I mean, the first time I told you, like, I got to play with the Nightbeats, and it was, I think, a brother and sister were on the rhythm section. And I thought it was very interesting visually. And very cool. Mm-hmm. The next time I heard about it, you had totally different people.
Yeah, that's funny. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I call what I do in this group Nightbeats. So we've had different members and stuff, you know, over the years. But, I mean, I don't like to look at things like that, like I am the band or anything
sure,
like
sure,
that.
Sure.
You know, I don't feel that way, but I feel like I'm leading it. I am literally the band leader, and I write the songs. So I don't know what else that would make me, but, you know,
yeah.
Nightbeats. But, you know, I have I have great guys with me right now. You know, Jager's been like my best friend since we were kids, and Jacob is a great good friend of mine, and they work their asses off, so you know, they're Nightbeats too. So
no, that's very interesting. Now I've watched the Nightbeats and kind of known about your scene from afar ever since that time I played with you, and I recognize the work ethic, and I remember seeing the tours that the Nightbeats were going on. Now, I've just done some research today and realized that your first the H-Bomb EP was picked up by Chicago Trouble in Mind label. But you guys toured your asses off, and to my knowledge, you were just a small Seattle band. Like, I never knew. I think they're going everywhere. Now you see, like, you're in South Africa and all this crazy shit. How did that start? At what point did you say, I just felt like I always wanted to do what you did and said, fuck it, I'm going to go for it 100%, dedicate my entirety of life, and just hit the road. Was there a moment when that hit?
That was the first idea, and there was no taking a chance, because I was going to do it whether or not I failed miserably or I got success.
Yeah.
So I didn't even see it as a chance, you know. Yeah, sure, financially it's a chance, and it always is, you know.
Yeah.
That's always going to be a struggle for any sort of touring musician or anything, but... That's, you know, that's funny that you say that, because we have an interesting relationship with Seattle. You know, half the time I don't think the city knows who we are, like, at all.
Yeah.
And we go to, you know, we go to London or something, and it's let's just say it's the complete opposite, you know.
They know who you are. They love it.
Yeah. And they go to a complete different part of the world, you know, in Jerusalem or South Africa or Germany, you know, all these places where they don't have, like, I think Seattle at times has, like, an ability to kind of disregard anything outside of the city that's...
Or the stranger as well.
What's that, sir?
The stranger also disregards.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to shit-talk anybody, but it's like,
yeah.
For what we've... The amount of work that we put in and the amount of lack... We're just now starting to see... Our record on KXP, you know, we're just now seeing that after, you know, 5 years and 30 countries later, for some reason, Seattle is starting to give a shit about us. But, you know, not to say, like, the people that have given a shit about us aren't really well deserved for it, you know, like, much thank you to everyone who's cared about it, you know. It's a weird town, you know, I love death, but it's good, it's weird. Or, like, you could be just a really popular person and sell out Numos or something, or you could be like a hardworking band that's touring constantly, that is living in a van, you know, like 100% giving their all, and they can't even sell out, you know, the Rendezvous or something, you know. So it's a weird thing. I don't know how you want to edit that to make it come off as not, you know, negative, whatever. But
I think it comes off as honest. I noticed the same thing. I was like, my God, this band's touring a ton, and they seem to be, like, I'm watching these videos, seem to be packing places in other lands, and I don't know, I never, it's weird, I know you guys are from Seattle, but I almost feel like it's your surrogate home or something, because I know you're a Texas guy. Do you feel Seattle is your home? Or
it for a while, when I was, like, living there and coming back to Seattle after tour and stuff, I felt like it was, like, my, you know, my home. You know, Texas was always, like, my home, but, like, Seattle was, like, where I wanted to start everything. And just over the years, it's kind of been less and less of a real city, respect thing that we never really saw. So, like, even with me being gone a lot, and with my dad and everything, I'm coming back to Texas a lot more. And, you know, I always have a place in my heart for Seattle, but it's not, it's like I don't see me, like, really... Well, at least, like, living there much anymore. I have a lot of, as I said, a lot of love and these great people, and I've had some of the best friends in the world up there, but I also don't really see Seattle these days as being our home, you know?
That's interesting. I felt like Rainwolf had a similar story. Like, you live in Seattle, but doing this crazy thing elsewhere. I don't know. Do you know that guy? Do you know Rainwolf? Have you seen that, him?
You know, his drummer, Joseph, we grew up together.
Oh really?
He's
where?
From Texas.
Oh, in Dallas.
He's from Dallas. He's a Dallas kid, and he was friends with, like, my older brother and stuff, and older sister, older brother.
Wow.
And he moved to Seattle pretty soon after I moved to Seattle, which was like 2007.
2001.
2007.
Oh, seven.
But he had a band up there called Mother's Anger that was doing stuff, really DIY, loud kind of Israeli proto-punk. It was pretty fucking cool. It was really weird. But he's an incredible drummer. But, yeah, I don't know Rainwolf particularly, like not personally. I know he's a really good guitar player.
Okay. Yeah, I felt like he didn't belong in Seattle, but somehow lived there. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Do you consider what you do in the Night Beats to be pop music by any chance?
Pop music? I mean, if you define pop music as strictly something like, you know, Michael Jackson or... like,
Justin Bieber?
Justin Bieber or something.
I don't define it that way.
I mean, pop music used to mean like Little Richard used to be pop music, and, you know,
Beatles were
pop music and stuff like that. So, I mean, we have songs of those elements. We also have like kind of anti-pop music too. You know, like for instance, like Last Train to Jordan is by no means meant to be on the top 40 list alongside Madonna and Coldplay or anything. But,
right. You
know, there's songs like Power Child has when White Room came out, you know, by The Cream, like that was a smash hit, you know? So was it pop music? Then maybe, but just like there's Night Beat songs that are very catchy and poppy and basic danceable stuff, then yeah, sure. At times. We could be anything at certain times.
I was hearing some hooks, man. And I look at pop music as like if it has a chorus, like if it's Slayer, if it's Hank Williams, Bob Marley, I look at that as pop music. That's my definition.
Sure.
I don't know.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, I see what you mean for sure.
Anyway, what are those lifetime bands for you, Lee, Danny Lee Blackwell? The lifetime bands, meaning the bands that will always be there for you to the end, that you started off with young, who you just love, who kind of influenced the way that you play guitar, you know, the way you write your songs.
So it's kind of hard to compare, like, you got to ask the question 1,000 times, like, inspirations and influences and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure.
But I feel like a question that's a little bit deeper than that. I would say Jesus Mary Chain will always be a band that I come back to. You know, Sam Cooke, Donny Hathaway. He's a singer from the 70s.
Stevie
Wonder. Lee Hazelwood, Spectrum 3, I'm sorry, Spaceman 3, and Spectrum. I mean, like...
Blink those Way. Bands that will always be there for you, just love them.
They'll always be like, when I'm 60 years old and I'm showing some random kid some playlist or something, those will, I'm sure, be on it. Yeah, I mean, I could always say Beatles and Rolling Stones, Lee Scratch Perry. Yeah, I mean, a lot of hip hop too. I'm a big hip hop fan. So.
Now, why do you play music, man? Why? I mean, what are you out to do, in the long run?
To say something and to. Hopefully inspire somebody, bring joy to someone's day, to maybe spread some sort of creativity and a feeling that you could be whoever you are and it's okay, you know, to be yourself. Because that's essentially what you're doing if you're touring. You're going to random cities where you know no one and you're, you know, screaming at the top of your lungs, you know, to...
what's going on?
You know, like... It's you know, to spread love, man. But at the same time, spread a message, and something needs to be said and no one's saying it, then you could use music as a vehicle for that. So then, and also just to give me some fucking peace of mind, because I feel the most natural, you know, doing that than anything else.
How many dates do you guys do a year, generally?
Well, in the past, we've done probably like up to 8 to 9 months out of the year.
Wow.
With a few weeks in between, not many, but depending on our recording schedule. Like this last 2015 was bogged down by a lot of different stuff. Started working with Jacob on the bass there, and just band drama as usual. But you know, we're pretty all mellow, low key guys, so we usually don't have that much of a problem. But so yeah, we recorded a lot last year and did mostly just like one offs. And we got like picked up this new management, and a lot of things were behind the scenes really busy. But generally, yeah, like 8 to 9 months of the year, that's all we're touring. Maybe more, maybe less.
Did you really tour with the Zombies or play with those guys?
Yeah, yeah. We did about 5 dates with them on the East Coast.
How did that come about?
The stars aligned. God is good.
Yeah.
I don't know. We got off like that opportunity. It's all this behind the scenes stuff about booking agents reaching out for a young band that the band likes or something. So I'm sure it had to do like with that. But yeah, they ended up choosing us, and we did it. It was very such a big honor. You know, I've been listening to those guys since I, you know, discovered them when I was a kid.
Did you get to watch them when they played every night? And how were those harmonies live? Were they just fucking awesome?
Incredible. These incredible singers, you know, like, just
yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, it was cool. I mean, that time, at that age or whatever, when you play, you sound like the record. Yeah, so that's an amazing thing, but it's also like, okay, you know, kind of cross it off the list, you know, kind of saying like, okay, I've seen that. But it was amazing. Every night they killed it. So,
are you a fan of zombie movies themselves? Not like Walking Dead necessarily, but like George Romero old school '60s zombie flicks at all?
To be honest with you, I really haven't seen that many.
Okay.
Like Night of the Living Dead, that's a zombie movie, right?
That's George Romero. Yeah, that's the first classic. Like
okay.
That. Yeah.
So I fucked with that, of course. That's some of the coolest stuff ever. But yeah, zombies became such a big thing recent years.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember which are the good ones and which are the shit ones.
Sure, sure.
I'd like to maybe score a zombie movie at some point. That'd be cool.
You guys have done a few really cool videos. I saw some video. It seemed like you guys put it together on the road with a home video camera. Damn, do you know which one I'm talking about? It's like a movie almost, a short film or something.
It might have been 7 Poison Wonders.
Yeah,
that's
one. It.
Yeah, we go to the show, and we pick up this crazy guy, and he kills Trigger, and we kill him. Yeah, that one is weird. That was, like,
I'll have to rewatch that. I remember really liking it. What does the term psychedelic music mean to you, man? I don't really know.
Oh, man. Well, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Like, if you're trying to define psychedelic, you're kind of missing the point.
Okay.
Now, people can label things however they want. I mean, if you want to be a music writer or something, you gotta have to use those words at times to give people kind of a reference point. So, if you're referencing psychedelic music, we're probably referencing like 13 to 4 Elevators, Space and 3, and maybe more like the 60s and 70s. Later 60s, 70s approach, such as, you know, Cream or, Hendrix and all those cats. But I don't know. So psychedelic to me is just anything with has a soul and a kind of an intention to open minds. And, it's like more of an open-minded, creative approach to music, if we're talking in the music sense.
Chris Chaveau of Rose Windows told me it meant a huge reverberated tambourine or something like that. I mean, I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I disagree.
He tried to define it completely.
I mean, if you're going off of like what bands that are classified as psych rock goes, then yeah, you might have some tambourine with some reverb and delay on it. But I mean, Hank Williams is psychedelic to me, you know, at some time.
Straight up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, you know, Buddy Guy was psychedelic. I don't think even, yeah, he's the most psychedelic.
Buddy Guy was.
Yeah, Little Richard is crazy psychedelic.
Basically mind expanding.
Yeah, mind expanding, but, you know, with like a soulful element. Because if you have 1,000 cookie-cutter bands that sound like Black Angels or something,
yeah,
is that really psychedelic anymore? Or does it just become, like, rock? Or, you know, or does it become just, like, a term that's just not based, like, even, like, punk, you know? Well, punk was a thing before it was a music genre. So, like, you know, like, it lived the punk lifestyle, but you also have, you know, Christian punk rock or something like that, where it's, like, I think that's kind of an oxymoron, so I don't know if you could really have that be your title.
Okay, yeah, okay. Have you ever put horns on a record before this most current record? The song Bad Love, I love the horns on that, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thanks.
Did you do that before? This the first time? I don't know.
On Sonic Bloom, we have a song called At the Gates.
Oh.
It has horns on it. And then some stuff like in my kind of private catalog that I don't really release, I experiment with horns and strings and stuff like that. But I guess I only have 2 songs out on Night Beats that have horns on them.
Are Night Beats able to, how does a band these days touring like you do, How do they make a living? I mean, do too many people steal the CDs? I mean, steal the records online? Is there too much Spotify happening? What's your opinion on all that? Can you make money from CD sales? Is it all touring? Is it all merchandise?
Okay. Well, it's not really. No, okay. Can you hold on for 1 second?
Yeah.
It's not really comparative. You can't really compare it to what, I guess, regular people might consider making a living, because
sure,
you go broke at times, and then you have suddenly all this money sometimes. And when I say all this money, it's a very relative term.
Yeah. That's...
But, you just try to live frugally and try to just... make your money however you can, you know. Like, we have online sales that generate some cash, not enough to really, you know, buy a house or anything or pay for an apartment, but, you know, just kind of how you run a business. It's kind of how, like, different people do things, you know. Some bands, they have each member already have a day job, and then they just tour, and then they come back to the day job. And then they tour again, and then they come back from the day job. And then they get, like, a sync in some movie or commercial.
Yeah,
and then they
right.
take a vacation, you know, or they spend it on this, this, and that. But, I mean, we've each individually been homeless, so it's not exactly the right choice for a lot of people, because a lot of people just kind of go crazy and not know what to do with themselves. But, yeah, you know, selling records and making interesting material that people want to buy, and hopefully people will support this person or group that's doing something that brings them pleasure. But, you know, I fucking stole music all the time when I was a kid, you know, especially like if I couldn't get it anywhere, you know. I mean, if it was like a new band, like a young band, I would save up my money and try to go buy the CD or something. But, man, like if you can't afford it, then steal it.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah. Are you down with the cassette revolution, man?
I'm into it. Everything we put out, we release on cassette.
Hell yeah. On Burger Records, or has there been others?
Burger. It's all about Burger. I mean, there's smaller ones, but Burger's.
Okay.
Yeah, Burger's Burger. Burger started that.
All right, man. A couple last questions here. It's been an honor, man. It's been really, really cool to talk with you.
I appreciate it.
So I what I want to know, Danny Lee, is what is your... Okay, so if it was you and 3 other bands modern day, what would be your dream bill right now?
Oh, current bands, like young or old or just any active band?
Any active band.
Oh, buddy. Let me think. It's not easy. Because usually I can give like a dead option, but I'm going to try to do my best with the live option, live people or whatever. Well, they're all alive, but I don't know if they're really active, but Spaceman 3, would be amazing. I know, like, Spiritualized plays and Spectrum and stuff like that, but Spaceman 3 would be amazing. Buddy Guy still plays, so I'd love to be a weird opener for him.
One more.
And then one more. Ronnie Spector.
Okay. Now, what would the if you could just see if you could see three bands from the history of whatever, who would they be? Dead. Sorry.
Okay. So dead. The Live or Dead. Okay. Cool.
The Live or Dead.
Yeah. James Brown and the Famous Flames, like his early group.
Okay.
That'd be amazing. I think it'd be great to somehow get Sun Ra to play with us. So yeah, Sun Ra, James Brown, and maybe like Love, like, you know, Arthur Lee, Love.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Arthur Lee, or just the band Love. But if I have like one extra throwaway card pick, yeah, I'd choose like The Crazy World of Arthur Brown.
All right. What's one last thing? What's in the future of the Night Beats Band? What's happening? What's the next thing on your itinerary? Where are you going?
Well, tonight I'm going to the Double Wide to go see Fred and Tootie of Dead Men play.
Oh, awesome! I've interviewed Tootie, man. She's great.
Oh, she's amazing. They're legends. They're a big part of the cause.
Dead Moon's totally psychedelic. They're amazing.
Yeah, if you notice, there's a couple little shout-outs that I give to Dead Moon. Like in the No Cops video, the hood of the car has a Dead Moon logo on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe give that a look. But, yeah, we're touring the States. We begin in Memphis, and then we do Chicago and stuff, and we come back to Texas for South By, and then we actually come up the West Coast. We'll be in Seattle on the 9th at Nemo's.
Are you coming to Pittsburgh by any chance?
Pittsburgh, not on this run, no.
Okay, cool.
But I love Pittsburgh.
I'm near Pittsburgh right now. Listen, man, I wanted to thank you so much. It's been about a year me tracking you down. Man, we did it. And thanks again.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Danny Lee Blackwell of the Night Beats. We will talk soon. You've been on the Shit Show with J-Bo, man.
Thank you, brother.
Later.